It's funny because, like, for the for Locked On, they tell you, like, yeah, engage with your commenters. It's good for the community.
Yeah.
And then, like, I start engaging with them, and then I just become a person that I don't want to become. And I'm like, I can't do this.
Are they mean on YouTube? I haven't noticed many mean people on YouTube. I feel like YouTube's more real than
anything. It's always a mix, but I think right now, because of the nature of the show that I do is based off of the Browns, you get the crazy Shador fans. And so, like, if you say anything...
Yeah, but you're a Shador supporter. I'm a Shador supporter.
You're telling me.
Maybe that's why I'm liking YouTube so much these days.
You're preaching to the choir, JP. I know that I'm a Shador supporter, and I think he's the most talented quarterback on this roster. But for some reason, anytime I just say the phrase, like, he was a fifth-round pick because he quite literally was a fifth-round pick, people are like, you keep disparaging his name. Like, the people here in the comments, like, bashing me, and they think I'm a hater.
Maybe stop being a hater, and this will all go away.
Makes no sense to
me. You, maybe it's a really make it that you stand on Shador's side. Kind of like you did in the first little sentence.
I could use you as a guest appearance on the show. Just to come on and be like, Spencer is a Shador supporter. We have been in this camp together. We're the only two people at the station who have felt this way.
Why don't you give me like 20 minutes to just wax poetic and everything I love about Shador, and then we can just make that one roll.
Yeah, and I'll just echo you. I'll just be like, yeah, I agree with everything you said.
Another good point.
I've been saying that
for
weeks.
Another good point.
Yeah,
and then
we were on the same page.
They'll leave, and they'll just be like, boy, the two of them just made a lot of really good points, did they not? I thought it was funny. One time I had, we had Chris in here, Fedor, and I was arguing with Fedor back and forth, and I looked at the comments on YouTube, because it was one of the first videos I think we'd put up of
his
Afternoon Drive
on
YouTube.
His comments are pretty bad.
Well, no, but it was great, because I was me just loving on Shador, basically, and Chris being just very not that way. And because they didn't know Chris, because when you go on YouTube, you get everyone, right? We'll get back to the Shador conversation we're having in a second, but they don't know everyone. So, like, for instance, if we do something for the station account here, everyone knows Chris's name and everyone knows that's Chris. Same way everyone knows that's me, and they know, you know, what I look like and everything like that for our station account. But on YouTube, even though it's our account, you get all these people from everywhere. So the insults hurled at Chris was really funny, but then they kept just saying, like, that guy. They'd be like, that guy with the beard is making a bad point. While that guy that's clean shaven, I like what he has to say. And it was just really funny to think of, because there's so many people. You just take yourself out of the bubble that is Cleveland, and there's so many people that have no awareness of me or Chris in any sort of capacity.
I do not want Fedor's comment section. He was on with Earl and I however many weeks ago, and that was like the first time he dropped that big bomb about, like, hey, you know, Darius is the thing you probably have to move if you want to improve the team. And, like, Earl and I had a lot of fun with it. We turned into a great conversation. But then, like, all these people, like, replying to Keith's video were like, this guy is probably not going to show his face around the locker room now that he made these comments. I was like, he's there every day. What are you talking about?
It's his job to be there.
Like, he talks to these guys in person. Like, he doesn't back down from his takes. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, it's Chris Fedor.
Anyway, we're on YouTube is the point. 92.3 The Fan. Go follow. Go like. Go yell at Spencer in the comments. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I get enough.
And you might yell about this video as... I just did like an Inception thing right there, where it's like, I'm going to talk about this video as then the video's not posted yet, but as if it's going to be.
You needed to look right in the camera when you said it.
Though. You up there. No, stop it. We're friends, right? We're friends. Yeah, we're friends. So anyway, so Shador, I'm fascinated by the idea that the amount of people that got turned off by Deshaun Watson helping him out and taking on this mentorship role. It's just between Shador or Dylan Gabriel. I don't care where you get good advice from. I don't care where you get a good lesson from. You telling me Deshaun can't teach them anything about being a quarterback? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. There just aren't that many people that have had the success. And I know it fell off for Deshaun, obviously. And you can say what you want about him in a personal level, and I won't disagree with much of it. But the point is, he knows a lot about the game of football. And even if he doesn't know a lot necessarily about the game of football, which I believe he does, he knows a lot about what it is to be a franchise quarterback, to be the person that has to go up to the podium after each game and be responsible for what happened during the game and being able to talk that out. All these little things that a lot of people don't even consider. And so I just think, turning away Deshaun in a moment where he wants to do something and give back in some way to the franchise that he has taken so much from financially and time-wise, I feel like, why don't we let him have a go at it?
I this is one of those instances where I think everyone is so emotional and one way or the other on, like, Deshaun Watson, who he is, all that, that, like, any little thing that comes up about him. We do this a lot in politics too, right? Like people get so entrenched in their side that like the second somebody on the other side does something that you think is like even small, very minimally controversial, like
analogies is a great way to limit the YouTube comments, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's keep moving towards that.
But no, what I mean is like, you know how it goes. Like the second they do something that's like even the smallest bit controversial, like not even really controversial, they're just like, they're ready to pounce and say like, I can't believe they did this. It's the same exact thing with Deshaun. Like the second Deshaun does anything, Deshaun walks down the street and, you know, looks at somebody the wrong way. And it's like, well, this guy, like it's just very hyperbolic. It's a very hyperbolic subject, very hyperbolic player. So I get it. But to me, I think people are making like a mountain out of a molehill here. Cause I feel the same way. Like there's a lot that can be learned from his experience as a quarterback, from the experiences of just like being responsible, like you said, for the wins and losses of a team and how you handle those pressures, how you go about your podium, you know, when you're at the podium, what you say in a post-game press conference setting, all kinds of stuff. And I do think like this is a way Deshaun's making himself useful right now while he's here. And I can accept that. I think that's fine. I don't think it's really that big of a deal. The other thing I'll say too is like, if you're worried about him influencing Shador Sanders to be like, I don't know, some terrible person. Like I think Shador Sanders doesn't get enough credit for being more mature in terms of like the player that he is. I understand what the pushback here is going to be. It's going to be a bunch of people calling in and saying, you think Shador Sanders is mature when he's going 100 miles per hour on the highway? Like, okay, I'm fine. Like,
also don't care.
Everybody is immature to some degree, but I think like from the way he carries himself,
speeding cannot be the measurement of maturity, by the way.
Right. No, I agree. Cause everybody pretty much does it. But from the way he carries himself, from the confidence he shows, from the way he already handles, I think those press conference settings, like he comes off as a very mature person. And I think that's all a byproduct of the world and the aura he grew up in as Deion Sanders' son. Like he's already experienced these things. He is more mature than I think a lot of quarterbacks coming out of college because of the lifestyle that he had. And so I don't think that like potentially one year with Deshaun Watson where he's like trying to just like help you and give you advice and things like that is going to like ruin all that and throw that out the window. I also think too, like, he's openly talked about getting advice from Joe Flacco. Like,
oh no, so
it's all the quarterbacks. I'm glad like, you brought all up Flacco. These guys are helping each other.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm glad you brought up Flacco because I was going to use him in a way. And you're right in that Shador has mentioned a relationship with Joe and how they get along. Yeah. But Joe is the one guy that in the preseason or not preseason, but in minicamp was like, I'm not your role model, essentially. He did the Charles Barkley. Like, yeah. I'm not your role model. I'm not the one you have to look or get to look to for advice. Like, I'll help you if it's convenient and I'm around, but I'm not here to babysit and I'm not here to do everything that's associated with that. So if he's taking himself off the board there, I don't want Kenny Pickett being the one to teach Shador Sanders. Dylan Gabriel can't teach Shador Sanders because they're both rookies. Like, if Deshaun Watson's the only one that is a player that has the experience, that has the accolades attached to what happened in his career and the good that he was doing in the early parts of his career, well, okay. Then open up your brain and figure it out. Like let's go with this.
I think all these quarterbacks can offer something in the way of mentorship to some degree. And the one thing I'll say in Flacco is, like, I don't think his overarching point, I think he gets lost in the sauce a little bit on what he said. I don't think it's that Flacco, to me, his point wasn't that, like, he won't mentor anybody or he won't help other guys in the room, especially young guys. It was more so just that, like, he thinks that happens just kind of naturally by being in the room around each other. He's not going to go out of his way to do that, though, because he's not, like, he didn't get paid to come in here and just like, hey, you're here to mentor these young guys. He came in to try to win the starting
job. And during a practice, for instance, if they're using, you know, two different fields and you have two quarterbacks on one side and two quarterbacks on another, Shador can't look to Joe and be like, so what happened on that play?
We can't really look to Deshaun either.
Joe's doing his own
thing. Deshaun's over in the weight room.
Well, Joe's doing his own thing, though. You know what I mean? But, like, in this instance,
I get what you're saying. But yeah, I think there's something he can learn from all these quarterbacks. Even Kenny Pickett, to a degree. Like, Kenny had a bad experience in Pittsburgh. He's had to deal with, like, going somewhere else and trying to rehabilitate his image.
I'm of the belief that you can learn something from just about anybody.
Yeah.
Even someone as lost as I believe Kenny Pickett is. But I who can offer more from a football standpoint and a teaching standpoint? I think Deshaun is
Flacco and Deshaun are the
same. Yeah, but again, we talked about the Flacco side of things. I'm not as convinced. I read it the same way you did. If teaching happens, it'll happen organically around Joe.
Right.
But Joe's not putting his arm around him and saying, hey, this is what I happen to see. Let's figure it out and let's diagnose it from here. Or, hey, here's a tip for when you go up against this or this or this. I just don't see that from Joe. Joe's dialed in on his own job, and that's fine. I don't begrudge him for that. 216-474-0092. Chris in Cleveland. What's up, Chris?
What's up, JP? Hey, how you fellas doing this evening?
Hey, Chris. What's up, man?
Chris, what's up?
Not too bad. I just don't want any setbacks. You know, for football reasons, the only reason I don't want Deshaun coaching him up or anything like that, look, this is Stefanski's offense. One, he didn't like Stefanski's offense. He didn't like being under center, and he held onto the ball too long. One of the things with Shadur, one of the nicks on Shadur was the fact that he holds onto the ball too long. A lot of that had to do with the offensive line he had. So as far as for football reasons, I don't think it's anything that he could teach him as far as on the field, because he didn't like Stefanski's offense anyway, and he didn't like two of the things that's necessary. I think one of the things you said, JP, what's his name, is that he does get rid of the ball quicker, you know, as far as for leadership. So I just don't want Deshaun holding him back by teaching them things that's not good towards Stefanski's offense. That can hold him back some. That's all I'm thinking.
All right, I got you. And thanks, Chris. I appreciate you, man. That's a fair point. I mean, like, again, this goes – I don't want Deshaun and Shador to be best buddies and them holding hands side by side. And then, like, when Shador gets in a game, looking over to Deshaun to be like, was that right? Was that good? But I also think – opening your eyes and opening whatever you can be receptive to that Deshaun would offer up here and there isn't the end of the world either.
I guess I would understand it more too if it was like we heard stories about, like, well, hey, they're going out clubbing together and like doing all this stuff. But this, from all we can, all we can deem at this point is when they're at the practice facility and they're in the quarterback room and they're working on stuff individually or as a team or as a group, like whatever, when they're around each other in a football setting, Deshaun is kind of helping mentor him. And I don't have a problem with that. I think we're just making a mountain out of a molehill.
There's got to be value there when it comes to Deshaun. Like, and it might be looked at as a quasi-coach type role, but you're paying him $46 million. If you can get something like this that I actually do think is valuable, why am I going to turn that down and shut it down just because he didn't look good in a Browns uniform and comes with some questionable things elsewhere? Just doesn't make sense to me. 216-474-0092. We'll continue with your phone calls on this. If you're hanging, hang tight. And is there a world where Stefanski's seat is hotter than Andrew Berry's at the end of the season? Warren Sharp weighed in. We'll have what he said as well. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan. Jonathan Peter and Spencer German with you guys here on Afternoon Drive. And Spencer, that's part of the problem, though, is that everyone wants to give Kevin Stefanski this pass for all these quarterbacks. And it's like, but I can say quarterbacks with an S because he's had a lot of them. Had a lot of chances. Yeah. Like, for instance, Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota got one chance with Sam Darnold, made Sam Darnold into a responsibly talented quarterback, which is, for lack of a better term, right there. Like, he's a good quarterback.
Responsibly talented. It just seemed that.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
start using that in, like, our pre-draft evaluations for quarterbacks now?
We're not going overboard.
Like, hey, that Drew Aller, he's gone from, you know, really reckless to responsibly talented now.
Hey, we're not going overboard. We're not going to say he's the second coming. We're not going to also then say that he's, hot garbage or anything either. Yeah, like, he made him into a pretty good quarterback. And like, that's a one-of-one opportunity there for Kevin O'Connell. Congratulations, you hit. Stefanski, it's year six. Where's yours? Yeah. Okay, we got a lot of quarterbacks offered up. Where's yours?
I think there was a point in time where you could tout the first year of Baker, obviously, and say, hey, you got the best out of Baker Mayfield. But now that Baker's playing better football in Tampa Bay, I think that goes somewhat out the window. There are other, you know, there's more context to that. I think Baker obviously needed to mature, and that's been part of his journey. But I think there's definitely some truth in, as you look back at the quarterbacks, like, the best results you have are Baker that first year, and then it fell apart. And, you know, Jacoby Brissett maybe
and
giving
you... And if I hear one more person say Jacoby Brissett, I'm going to lose my mind.
Giving you, like, maybe
nobody
one of his
cares.
Best years. And then Joe Flacco was a 17-year veteran coming in like, the perfect system and, like, helping you win five games to get to the playoffs. Like, those are the sample sizes. But none of those, like, inspire much confidence that he's this quarterback guru who can, like, build a guy from scratch or draft the right guy and then turn him into your franchise quarterback, because we haven't seen it yet. Which is why, like, the situation with these two quarterbacks right now, these two rookies at least, is so fascinating, because, yeah, they drafted DTR. Everyone throws that back in my face. They're like, well, they've drafted quarterbacks. Like, yeah, it was DTR. Like, we all knew what DTR was going to be. And this is the first time that they legitimately, like, their plan is, we need to find a quarterback through the draft. And we're sort of just stopgapping it to get there. And they actually have two guys that they think they can maybe turn into something. And then maybe we get another one next year that gets thrown in the mix. But this is the first time we're seeing him do this, and nobody really knows if he can actually do it.
We have no proof that he can. Right. The guy walks around like he's Kyle Shanahan, like he took Jimmy Garoppolo to the Super Bowl or Brock Purdy to the Super Bowl, and he hasn't done that. And I think it's incredibly fascinating. I mean, 6 years into this thing, and Warren Sharp is already like, yeah, so next year, we'll find out what he's got with the 2026 quarterback class, and that's going to be what we really judge him off of. How many years can we give you? I brought it up last week, the idea that everyone goes back to what happened in Minnesota as the crowning jewel moment for what he's been able to do. Congratulations to the Vikings fans. What has that done for us? We've had the guy as a head coach for a million years.
So I do actually think like Warren Sharp is right in that and this just kind of stems from my feelings on like, you know, Jimmy Haslam at the owners meetings back in March. He made the comment about, we got to dig ourselves out of this Deshaun thing, and this draft is really important, but the next couple drafts are important. He has basically hinted at they're going to, like him and it, Kevin Stefanski and Njigba.
He's done more than hint at it. He's flat out said it. I just don't buy what he's saying because I don't trust Jimmy Haslam when it comes to that.
There's reasons not to. I get that. But because he said these things, I'm inclined to believe that like these two are tied to each other. Like when one goes, the other one goes.
Okay, so you think they're Bert and Ernie?
I do think that's probably the way that it plays out. But what I do find interesting, JP, is that like this time last year, I think most of us would have said, "Yeah, you know, well, no, this time last year we were coming off the Joe Flacco 5-game run to the playoffs, and we were like feeling good, pretty good about things. And it was like if Deshaun could get back to being Deshaun, maybe this can be even better. And so I think people felt really good about Kevin Stefanski. He squeezed all he could out of a team that was banged up all year and injured and had all this adversity, got him to the playoffs. And so I think last year this time we would have said, yeah, like Kevin Stefanski, his job security is pretty solid.
Yeah, he just won his second Coach of the Year award.
But Andrew Berry, like, we have questions. And then the 3-14 season happens, and I think both were under question. But I think it was more so Andrew Berry that was like, where's the talent on this team? And how are you going to dig yourself out of the situation that you're in? Yeah. And so people wanted him fired. What I think is interesting is that now that Andrew Berry has survived, and he's made it through this draft, which is a very pivotal draft for him, is there a world where we get to the end of, like, this next season and the players that Andrew Berry drafted this year are like hits. Like Quinshon Judkins, a star. Mason Graham is the number 5 overall pick, is showing why he's a number 5 overall pick. Mm-hmm. Carson Schwessinger is like the next JOK. And even if 3 guys sit, you're like, okay, yeah, you feel pretty good about this class. And then we're talking in the reverse where it's like, now all of a sudden Andrew Berry's maybe redeemed his reputation a little bit as a guy that can actually draft and develop talent. And it's the buck stops with Kevin Stefanski. The team only wins 4 games with that talent. And we're sitting here like, maybe it is time for Kevin Stefanski to go.
Well, and I think we might start to turn around too. Like if we start thinking about Andrew Berry in a positive drafting light, maybe we turn around and say, well, wait, were all those wide receivers that he drafted in the 3rd round, were they really that bad?
Yeah.
Or was Stefanski not good at developing them? Was Stefanski the problem in that? And I can see how the narrative could start to flip. Like, I think it's a perfect situation this upcoming season for both of them, by the way, to have a redemption of sorts. Like, I think Andrew Berry is primed because I really liked his draft this last year. I mean, I always will. I think it was really smart in a lot of different directions. And I think he got a lot of really good players.
Yeah, Sam Monson, I talked about this on Saturday. He had on his podcast he does with Steve Palazzolo.
Mm-hmm.
He called it underrated. Like, yeah. And I agree. I don't think people are talking enough about like the moves that they made and the margins, understanding they can only do so much. Yes, like they didn't take a tackle. We know that they didn't take a receiver. There were still things they could have done that we would have liked, but I think in the grand scheme of things, I thought he had a really good offseason in general.
Yeah, and so I like what he's done, but I think he's got a chance to obviously rewrite some of his narrative.
Yeah.
And then Stefanski, listen, you have an opportunity. We brought up Kevin O'Connell for a reason. You have an opportunity to have your Sam Darnold moment. It's Shador, it's Gabriel, it's Kenny Pickett, maybe. That could be one of the possibilities, too.
It's good. That's why I think they want Kenny Pickett.
I mean,
to have that moment. I think he wants to show, like, look what I did with Kenny Pickett, and then that's going to be his
calling. You win across the league. If you have Kenny Pickett be a good quarterback after being an absolute nothing burger in
Pittsburgh.
But
does he have to be good and you make the playoffs, or does he have to be good and, like, you win 5 games?
No. That's interesting. It's a good question because, like, the Vikings, for instance, won 14 games.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was part of, like, this equation of a team that was really, really good last year.
I don't think you have to make it to the playoffs in order for it to be deemed successful. But I do think Kenny Pickett has to look like a type of quarterback that at the end of the season there are teams saying, we want to pay him $40 million a year. We want to pay him in that same framework like a Geno Smith or like a Sam Darnold got paid. I think that's got to be the conversation. You go from an absolute just forgotten soul in the NFL to then somebody that people are really, really clamoring to want and write a paycheck to, that I think has got to be the difference. And then he'll win this in spades. If he gets Kenny Pickett going, he is going to... Stefanski not only has this job for the next quarterback, he's got it for the next quarterback and potentially the next quarterback after the next quarterback, okay? Yeah. Like, he'll have a long leash if he does that, and I think he knows that. So, like, it's open avenue. Like, the road is... It's sitting there for you. Both Stefanski and Barry can end up smelling like roses after this season. Now, conversely, there's also the other side of this coin, too. And I just think when you ask the question, is there a world where Stefanski's seat is hotter than Andrew Barry's at the end of the season? If you were to ask me which is more likely, I look back at the end of this year and this draft class is awesome, or I look back after this season and Kenny Pickett is awesome, I'm going to bet on the first one. I'm going to bet on the draft class looking better than I'm going to bet on Kenny Pickett having some sort of magical revival to his career.
That's how I would feel as well. Yeah, and I think what's like for the big thing in this is like if the team's bad but you don't feel like Kevin's lost the locker room, that's always the big thing I go back to. I know it's very cliche, but like,
which it's really hard to be bad and not lose the locker
room. Yeah, well, he's done it a couple times now because like last year somehow he didn't lose it, and a couple years ago
he lost
before
that locker room. Miles was publicly talking all sorts of.
I guess that's kind of fair, to a degree.
That locker room was gone.
But if he keeps it together in another bad season, then it's like okay, maybe he gets to stay. But if there's more of that and there's like you know infighting and there's all these things that we're hearing about, like I don't know how even if you want to keep Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry together, I don't know how you don't move on from a coach who's lost the locker room. I agree.
216-474-0092 Eddie in Westlake, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
What's up?
Hey, in my opinion, man, like Stefanski's seat is hotter right now. I mean, look. I mean, I know people want to beat up Andrew Barry about his prior drafts, but Andrew in a draft alone, I mean, his drafts haven't been. You know, I wouldn't say they're top five, but they're probably in the upper half of the league. But the reality of it is nonetheless, with his trades and all and free agency, out of the 5 years they've been here, the Browns have had like a where people said they had a top five roster. At least two for sure, but maybe three of those 5 years. So he can't pick the players and then coach them too. So when we look at Kevin Stefanski, I think people be getting lost in the fact that he's a really good offensive coordinator. But we talking about head coach. So head coach is just gauged on wins and losses. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's it. Period. Now we make a lot of excuses, but like you know, the one thing about Tomlin is. Yeah, they might not be going to the Super Bowl and all of that, but they're going to the playoffs every year with mediocre quarterback play. So he's not an offensive guru. You see what I'm saying? So I need you just to produce wins. That's all I need you to do is wins, because at the end of the day, if that means getting back to what you did in those two player of the year years where we had a COVID year and everything went right, we had a top five defense that won I don't know how many different games, single players that won games. If we got to go back to that to get to where we at, then that's what we got to do. But, you know, people keep on saying, like, let's give him the keys to a quarterback and all that. But, like, you know, yeah, that's easy to do it that way. But, like, it's a lot harder when things go, when it's adversity and stuff. And I know you say, well, he won with all these other quarterbacks. But, man, we had a top five defense, man. They was lights out. That lights out, period. I mean, and they didn't show up in the playoff game, but they were lights out during the regular season. That's not going to happen all the time. So you got to figure out what your identity is, and if it's going back to running the football, you know, like we did.
I think it's going to be running the ball and a strong defense, Eddie.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, his seat is real high. Because if you don't have three top five rosters, they said our roster is top five. You know, everybody's going, oh, the Browns, they were glamoring about it, and even going into this season when we went 3-14. They talking about we got a top five roster.
Mm-hmm.
So how we go from top five roster to 3-14? I don't know. I mean, you tell me. But what I'm trying to tell you is that's a reflection of the head coach. Whether we say he lost the locker room or not, you got to produce wins. So you got to figure out how.
Yeah, I mean, because Eddie, I can only judge him off so much, but wins has to be a key component to it. And I appreciate you as always. Like wins has to be the metric that we use at the end of the day. And he hasn't done enough winning. Didn't do it last year. And right now, Vegas tells you he's not going to do it enough this year. Chris in North Ridgeville. What's up, Chris?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Hey, Chris.
Yo, what's up, man?
Good. Hey, I just want to differentiate two things first here. It's the difference between Kevin Stefanski, the coach, and the CEO, because I don't know how much power he has inside that building. I don't know what the structure is. But I know when Baker was playing good that first year, we were killing it. His worst decision was when he blew his arm out, not sitting him. That set us back and put us through this whole nightmare. Then the Deshaun Watson debacle happened. His first year, doesn't play 11 games. Second year, we start to get something cooking. He gets hurt. The third year, we decide to revamp everything because God knows Deshaun can't do any, can only do one thing right. Revamp everything, completely torch the offense for this guy. And then finally, we just say, what were we doing? We got greedy. That last caller talked about Pittsburgh. Oh, they're 8-8 every year. You know why? They don't get greedy. They go, this is what we are. We're going to do the best of what we got. We took a big bite and a big swing with Deshaun, and it bit us in the butt, the worst thing in professional sports ever. And I think Stefanski getting back to what he does well, the plays he runs, run, play action, double tight end, your boy Shador should love that kind of stuff. So
should.
I think when he get him getting back to his roots as a coach, well, like I said, as a CEO, yeah, he's made some questionable calls, but I don't know how much power he has. But as a football coach, I was impressed with the 1 year with Baker and the 1 year where Deshaun was playing well in the front half before he got hurt. I was psyched. And, well, and we get that news against Baltimore. Deshaun's out. I'm like, God, can we catch a damn break around here?
Yeah, no doubt. And thank you, Chris. I appreciate you. And like that, and that's why, you mentioned some of the positives there. And there are positives to Stefanski. I don't want to make it seem like anyone's just ripping on him. But, like, this is what you do best. The quarterback side of things, like, take away all the CEO components and everything else that comes with being a head coach. Like, if this is what you're supposed to do best, well, guess what? No one thinks you're going to pull it off this year. Show us something. Like, impress us a little bit. And it's wide open for you to do just that.
We compare him to all these other coaches, Kyle Shanahan, even to some degree, probably Kevin O'Connell. Like, there's the great offensive minds right now. If those guys are doing that with the likes of, like, Brock Purdy's of the world and last year with Sam Darnold in Minnesota, then, yeah, this is your chance to do it with somebody as well. And again, maybe Flacco doesn't give you the full picture of that if he ends up starting. But I do think that's part of this. This whole conversation we're having about Stefanski being desperate to, like, find that guy that he can, like, do something with and find his own Sam Darnold is maybe one of the bigger reasons why Kenny Pickett is considered the favorite going into training camp to win the job. I think it has to be part of the equation here for sure.
What exactly is going on in Pittsburgh? We'll address that and more when we come on back. Final segment of the show, in case we missed it, next right here on The Fan.